Pia Wursu on ABC Radio Hobart and ABC Northern Tasmania.
With the rise of the internet and social media more specifically, the ability to communicate with huge numbers of people, literally millions of people around the world with one tweet, has grown exponentially. So does this change how we think about free speech? I'm sure you've heard by now about outgoing President Donald Trump being permanently banned from several social media platforms following rioters storming Capitol Hill last week. There have been those calling this an interference with free speech. To help unpick this, Professor Kath Gelber is Head of School of Political Science and International Studies at the University of Queensland. Good morning. Does free speech need a new definition in the age of the internet and social media, do you think?
Good morning. Thank you for having me. I do think that the internet age really challenges some long-held assumptions about free speech. For example, one of the very traditional arguments in favour of free speech is that it helps people to deliberate, to decide the truth for themselves, you know, to decide what evidence to believe and so on. And in the internet age, we're seeing that actually completely unfettered social media communication can do precisely the opposite of that. Having said that, there is no free speech argument anywhere that has ever justified the incitement of violence and the incitement of crimes on free speech grounds. What happened last week in the Capitol in Washington, D.C. was, in my view, clearly an incitement to violence, an incitement to insurrection, an incitement to commit crimes. That has never been protected speech under any reading of free speech arguments.
It's interesting, the discussion that has sort of blown up around this. Could an argument be made that this is the thin edge of the wedge? You start, banning some people from having a platform for, you know, free speech, and then it slowly trickles down with this sort of very insidious effect. More and more people get that right taken away from them.
Well, I think that's an alarmist argument, and I don't think it stands up to the evidence, because in all liberal democratic countries around the world, there are already numerous limits on free speech. The debate is not whether or not there should be a limit, because we all agree there should be a limit somewhere. Some people draw it differently to others, but we all agree there should be a limit, for example, on incitement to violence, on true threats, on some forms of obscenity, for example. So the question isn't whether there should be a limit. The question is where the limit should be. And that thin edge of the wedge argument presupposes that there shouldn't be a limit at all, and that if we start imposing limits, we're going to get it wrong. Fact is, there are lots of limits. Some of them I agree with and some of them I don't. But there are clear and sensible ways to determine those limits, and the most clear and the most sensible and the most justified way of determining that limit is whether or not the speech harms. And the speech that has now been taken off Twitter was taken off Twitter on the ground. Twitter said it very clearly that it violates their standards because it incites violence and it is likely to continue to incite violence. And that is a type of speech that cannot be protected.
What do you make of the fact that in this case and others, it's essentially a private corporate entity that's making the decisions around whether or not to ban these people, to remove these accounts, who to essentially give or not give that platform to?
Yes, so that's the dilemma of our age, isn't it? When free speech arguments were first developed in the 19th century, the idea was that government would be the entity that we should be most concerned about in terms of an over-regulatory approach. In the internet age, of course, private corporations have made massive profits out of their business model, and their business model has basically asked for a no-holds-barred free speech approach until very recently, where the costs of that speech have been disproportionately borne by the marginalised who are on those sites. So there's plenty of research now that shows that it's marginalised people who suffer from the costs of unfettered free speech. And therefore, there's a lot of pressure on those private entities now to do some form of regulation. And they're trying. They really are. They've got content standards which are open to the public. Facebook has a new independent oversight board whose job it is to mediate and make decisions over disputes over content moderation that have already gone through Facebook's internal processes. So they're really trying, but they're not very well equipped to do it. And I don't think that we could or should rely only on the private entities to do it. This needs to be a joint effort between private enterprise and between governments with an appropriate regulatory response that recognises that where speech harms, it can and should be regulated.
You're hearing from Professor Kath Gelber, Head of School of Political Science and International Studies at the University of Queensland. I mean, we've spoken about, there definitely being a limit around inciting of violence and that actually not being protected by free speech. If we pull it back a few notches, though, how do we balance freedom of speech and the spreading of false information, which is not necessarily incitement to violence, but I think we've seen can be damaging to democracies? How do we balance that?
Yes, so that's a very good question. Obviously, you can't just ban all false information because there are a lot of things which are disputed. But again, what we've seen with the Trump administration, or with President Trump himself, really, is that there is a point at which you can say that somebody is promoting views that are directly contrary to the evidence, that are directly overlooking the views of experts, that directly contradict the truth. And that's, for example, what we've seen in the prolonged claims that the election was stolen, when all of the relevant authorities have said that it was the most free and it was the most secure election in United States history. So it's difficult. Obviously, you can't ban or censor or silence everything that somebody might regard as false information. But there is a point, again, at which the deliberate promotion of false information begins to harm. It harms the public sphere, it harms democracy, it harms institutions. And don't forget that that there's a multitude of possible responses to that. So at the moment, or prior to the banning of Trump, Twitter was putting up disclaimers that said this tweet is disputed. They could have gone further and said this tweet is false. This information is false. They could have links to the evidence that shows that this was the most secure election in American history. So there need to be more proactive responses to the misinformation and disinformation. The difference between those two is misinformation is just false information, but disinformation is the deliberate promulgation of false information in order to mislead and deceive. And that type of activity, there's actually a discussion going on in Australia at the moment about how to regulate disinformation, because that's deliberately designed to target and to harm.